Om Shanti. Here at the Brahmakumaris World Spiritual University in Rajasthan, India, we're working together to create a value-based society. So what does that entail? Well, part of it is meditation, and part of it is a lifestyle that creates a value-based world as a consequence of that lifestyle. And today I'd like to take up the subject of and value of simplicity as a quality that is capable of taking us to a world which is very comfortable for everyone to live in. Now, simplicity, like so many other things, is very often associated with, you know, being a little simple. In other words, not very intelligent. And it's almost as if there's some kind of a propaganda against simplicity because of its association with lack of intelligence. But in fact, we need to reconsider the word and what it really implies in order to be able to take maximum benefit. So how do we look at simplicity in the Brahmakumaris? What does it mean for us? Well, it covers a wide variety of areas, but let us look at just a few of them. One of the things that simplicity means to me is a state of being uncluttered. And that's very important for me because I value my freedom and I like to have space in my mind that allows my creativity to work well, that allows me the inner clarity to pursue the depth of my meditation and spiritual study. And so simplicity is a very important quality that I use to clear away any kind of excess that has a tendency to build up. And so that means there is an inner simplicity that is also reflected in an external simplicity. And to me, simplicity doesn't mean austerity. Simplicity for me is I have to understand myself clearly, who I am and what it is that I need to do. Then I can make sure that whatever equipment is necessary for that, that is what I have. And together with that, I have the freedom and the space to do what I need to do. That means I have to be clear. So it's not possible to have simplicity without clarity, and it's not possible to have clarity without intelligence. So in fact, to associate simplicity with lack of intelligence is a real red herring. So how do we achieve that kind of intelligence that enables us to have a life where all the clutter is gone? It's a question of a system that is put into effect on a daily basis. What is that system? It's an inner and outer cleaning and clearing. And it begins with thought. So we're very selective. Simplicity is a quality that is acquired when you select that which is exactly the right thing. There are some forms of art where everything is included in just a couple of lines. You might think of a Japanese garden, for example. Very simple, but yet so deep. Everything excess is let go of. So let's go into the mind. How do I have simplicity in my mind? Simplicity such that my mind is able to do the work that I want it to do. And that has to do with producing very pure and very powerful thoughts So anything that is garbage, clutter, untidiness cannot stay in my mind, because if it's there, I will be distracted from my real purpose. So what I need to do as a part of my meditation discipline is to check inside and see what thoughts are going on. So this internal checking mechanism is a very essential process. You turn your attention within and just watch exactly what thoughts emerge. There are many kinds of thoughts, and in the Brahma Kumaris we will categorize the thoughts so that we can do the work of acquiring that selective capability very quickly. In a general way, we will categorize thoughts as being good thoughts, bad thoughts, ordinary thoughts, waste thoughts. Generally speaking, what happens for a regular person is it's rather like a kind of a bell curve. You have a very small amount of really awful thoughts, right? Doesn't happen that much. And then you also have a very small amount of really good, powerful, pure thoughts. But the bulk in that curve is, it's not exactly bad, but it's not that interesting, it's not that good. So most of our thoughts tend to fall in the category of ordinary or waste. Waste means it's not bad, but it's not useful either. And the thing about waste is if you don't get rid of it, it has a tendency to go bad. You know what happens if you don't throw away the garbage. It'll start to smell and attract insects, and you won't want to be in a place where the waste is not removed. In the same way in the mind. And so this process of looking inside and identifying exactly what category your thoughts fall into, and then the next step is to act on it. What we want is to have very good quality, useful, productive thoughts. And we don't need hundreds and hundreds of thoughts. Ordinary thoughts tend to come in large quantities and they are produced very quickly. Negative thoughts tend to be very repetitive, very heavy, they weigh you down, you have to battle, your conscience comes in, you want to do it, you don't want to do it. Negative thoughts are very exhausting and they absolutely prevent you from achieving what can be done with the mind. Because the mind is the most powerful instrument known to humanity. The problem is, due to this large amount of negative and ordinary and waste thoughts, that potency is not able to be brought to fruition. So part of meditation is to do that. And the system of clearing out, keeping on every day, several times a day, clearing out anything that doesn't correspond with your essence, your beauty, your higher purpose. And so this introspection, as soon as you see something inside in the mind that doesn't fit, you let it go. And so the development of a very pure and simple consciousness creates a vast space within. And then you go into stillness and silence. And in that breadth of stillness, as you connect with the divine, what will happen is these gems of thoughts will emerge in your mind that are valuable, beautiful, and beneficial. And because of your consistent removal of the ordinary, the waste, and the negative, those thoughts have power. If you can hold a thought for several minutes, that thought has a lot of power, and the power it has is it transforms itself into reality. Now, who would say no to that? If you could get things done just by thinking about them. How nice that would be. Well, this is exactly what simplicity will create for us. Once you take it from the inner state of the mind into an external expression, you have to understand that our outer expression corresponds very closely to what's going on inside. And so if I want to have a completely clean and clear state inside so that those gems can emerge, then what I want around me is order, and only those things that are beautiful, symmetrical, useful, necessary, appropriate, because that establishes a certain resonance, a certain environment in which those thoughts that are being produced can easily take form. And so if we develop simplicity, it means that our needs will be very precise. We understand what we need in order to accomplish what we understand we have to do. We understand the needs for maintaining our physical body. We understand the needs for transporting ourselves from A to B in the most appropriate way. We understand what materials to put on this body which reflect, you know, how we want to come across, how we want to present ourselves, because we don't want to have to spend time dealing with extra things, because as much as we create extra, that much we are intruding upon the real purpose of the use of our time, energy, effort, breath, and thought. Because thought itself is a very potent treasure, and we have to learn to be economical with it. So if we want to have that, then we have to be economical also with money, with time, with words. And so that also involves developing that instinct which lets us have the right thought, the right word, the right decision at the right time. And then when it's done, returning to that state of stillness in which you are ready to move forward creatively. In the same way, simplicity in relationships. A person who has that value for simplicity will not play games in relationships, because it's too time consuming. Why would you create all kinds of problems only so you have to solve them for no very good reason? That kind of clutter doesn't suit a person who likes that sweetness of simplicity. In how you move around the world, a person with simplicity also has that clarity of exactly what they want to do, when and how. So there's a certain directness that's connected with it. When you operate in this way, then it is possible to develop the consciousness such that pretty much the whole time you are able to operate on several levels, because your inner energy is conserved. That means you can be doing some tasks, some necessary tasks, quite quickly, quite efficiently, and at the same time, in your mind, you may be doing a higher spiritual task. You may be radiating pure energy. You may be constructing something that will become later a creative work. Why can you do that? Because you have trained your mind not to get caught up in the waste, the negative, the ordinary. One very interesting sign of simplicity is if our thoughts are not endlessly repeating. And if you look inside, you will find that a lot of time there is repetition going on. And if you really trust yourself, Once you have thought something once, that's actually enough. Once you've understood something, once you've decided on something, it's clear, you go ahead and do it. So simplicity keeps us from the wavering and ambivalence that comes when we have a lot of repetition. Because when there's a lot of repetition inside, there's sometimes conflicting repetitions going on. And what this causes is a fragmentation and scattering of the mind. So the act that you do, essentially through meditation, of bringing the scattered, fragmented energies of your mind into a one-pointed, focused attention, allows you to consolidate that strength. And then you just select exactly where you want to direct that energy. So this practice of being selective is also very connected with simplicity. And one of the things that you get in a life like that is you never get this sense of being overwhelmed or out of your depth or feeling that you never have time. You never hear from people that, oh, such and such a person is too busy, I can't see them. That will not happen. Because when you have simplicity, things get done quickly, easily, effortlessly, and efficiently. And then you have this feeling of always being available, ready. And then at the end of the day, what you find is due to simplicity, you have accomplished much more. When there's a lot of complications, it means that we are very susceptible to distraction. I don't know if you've ever had that experience, that you're about to do something, you get distracted, you find yourself somewhere, you don't know why you're there, you don't know what you were trying to do, you know, because the mind is easily scattered. Then you have to retrace your steps, so much time is wasted. Then what happens is that if there is simplicity and you maintain your focus of purpose, then there's never that sense of leading a life which is on the one hand trying to be spiritual, but then on the other hand it's moving in the opposite direction. So if you're doing things which are opposed to each other, then there's a strain, there's a stress that goes on inside. And this can take the form of physical illness or upset. And then you find again that you make mistakes. When you get rushed, when you feel that you've got too much to do, when you try and hurry, mistakes happen very easily. And you know the expression, perhaps, there's never enough time to do it right, but there's always time to do it again. And so we have to be careful that we don't get caught in that kind of a situation. Because when we do that, when we have to repeat our activities because of lack of attention, because of carelessness, because of distraction, we lose a lot of time. And what this will do ultimately is we will get this feeling of being disheartened, you see. When a person gets disheartened, that will fairly quickly degenerate into depression, and then you don't feel like doing anything. And at that time, the mind is very susceptible to all kinds of thoughts floating around, and then the state of fragmentation in the mind moves very, very quickly. And then when you want to collect your mental energies, your spiritual energies together again, it's a lot of work. And the question is, do we really want to do that to ourselves? Or is it not worth trying to establish that rhythm where certain things are done regularly and establishing such a momentum that there is a strength within? See, there's so many people in the world who feel they just don't have the strength to do what they'd like to do. And then it becomes a nice idea, but no sense of achievement. And in order for us to feel success in life, we need to have a sense of achievement. So how does this create a difference in the world. Well, there is a very beautiful spiritual law which we apply a lot in the Brahma Kumaris University. And it says that whatever it is that I do, other people will watch and they will do the same thing. And sometimes we think that just one individual doing what it is that they feel to be right won't have any effect because it's only one individual. And so the sense of being by oneself can also lead to disheartenment. But if you remember this law and you just see what is really, really good for you, then you will notice, especially through this value of simplicity, that you are able to get on with who you are and get on with what you do the best, which is very focused and very clear. And you might not even notice it, but many, many people are taking inspiration. They may not necessarily tell you about it, but sooner or later you will understand that what you have been doing without realizing it has actually made a huge difference in the lives of many people. And you become a kind of a force which enables all the things around you in your environment, the circumstances, the situations, to all go moving in one direction because you have worked on your own simplicity. Now, when everything is moving in one direction, definitely you reach your destination. The sense of not getting anywhere is simply due to being scattered, which is also due to complexity, too many things, and not realizing that this is much, much more counterproductive than you think. So take a look in your day, in your house, in your relationships, and see what is extra, what is superfluous, what is in the way, and take that thing and put it to a better use. Or if it's really garbage, throw it away. So, a little homework to do. Om Shanti. Shanti. Here at the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University, we're working to create a value-based society. And for that, we're looking closely at individual values so that that can be developed within the self and by extension in the immediate and far surroundings. Today, I would like to take up the value of unity. Now, we live in a society which is very much based in individuality. This is the quality, the value that is very much praised in the world. And yet, the spiritual value of unity is being promoted as an extremely important quality. And so what does that mean for those of us who have developed in an environment that promotes individuality? One of the analogies is just the human hand. The question arises, which finger is more important? And there are stories about how, you know, each finger will say, well, I'm more important because of my different activities. But the symbol of the human hand is that when all the fingers come together, then only a task can be accomplished. And this is the thing, that as individuals, we may be very capable, very talented, and so on. But in fact, no single one of us can actually accomplish what needs to be accomplished, either for our own selves or for a larger, higher purpose, if we are alone. You know, sometimes I think when anyone puts their name at the end of any book or painting or anything, that you say this thing was done by such and such a person, you know, you'll find if you look closer that there's a lot more other people involved. In books you see how many is the list of acknowledgements, and even if you look within your own self at any of the things that you can say, yes, I did this, but then did you do it all by yourself? And in fact, even if a person does something entirely alone, still you have to look further. Well, what about the equipment? Did you create the equipment yourself? Did you create the circumstances? Did you create the situation where what you did could be useful to other people? And so there's always much more than we realize. And in fact, part of developing a value-based society is to address the aspect of ego that comes automatically when there is this very tremendous praise of just the isolated individual. So let's take a look at how this works and a little bit more about it. Every single individual comes into the world somehow or the other in some kind of a family context. You may have your biological family, or if you don't, and there are people who don't, still, sooner or later you will find yourself among a group of people which becomes your family. And if you have a feeling of family, that also gives you a feeling of belonging. And every person needs to have a feeling of belonging. You see, if you take the five fingers of your hand and you cut them off and scatter them, they actually can't do anything. They're only really useful when they're connected with the hand, where they belong to the hand, and they work in relationship with each other, either to do something beautiful or to do something useful. You can't even eat without your hand. And the hand is used in so many ways to represent the things that are valuable in human communication, the warmth, the sense of continuity, the sense of companionship, as shown by so many indications. And it's really about coming together. For anything to happen that has any real meaning, we must come together. What are the difficulties around coming together? Well, of course, the difficulties are an expression of the differences. And again, looking at the hand, every finger is different from every other finger. But when we come together, it works. In the same way with people, whoever we are with, the people we work with, the people we live with, the people in the group that we belong to, that we are part of, we will find that we come into sometimes clashes with other individuals. And why does that take place? What are the deep secrets that we can discern within that? Because after all, in any great achievement, there's always challenges. We have circumstantial challenges. Everybody has those. There are no exemptions. And we also have challenges with people. And those challenges are because of lack of harmony. So unity and harmony are very connected. We cannot work together unless we are in harmony with the people that we work with. We cannot live together unless we learn the dance of harmony that enables life to be experienced as sweet and full of fragrance and meaning. And so there are many, many virtues and qualities that help us to develop a sense of unity. And one very important part of that is appreciation. You know, if we understand our qualities, then we think, well, my qualities should be used. We look at it from that perspective of the self being the center of the universe and everything else is in relation to the self. This is the position of the individual. But when we want to develop unity and we use the perspective of appreciation, then we develop within ourselves an attitude that sees the value of each one that we are connected with. And when we want to see someone's value, we see their specialities, because every single human being has at least one speciality, and of course it's always going to be more than one. So we need to be able to view that person according to their specialities, because if we look at a person in terms of what they don't have, then we are unable to take benefit of their speciality, because our focus is on the deficiency, and so there's automatically going to be disunity. If I look at another person's deficiency, I will feel bad. If I think that another person doesn't like me, then I will start to dislike myself. I will say, I'm very nice, why does this person dislike me? But at the same time, I will think that there must be something wrong with me. Whereas if I look at the person's speciality and I celebrate the differences, then I will look at the other person's relationship with me with an assumption that I'm very nice, of course they like me. If I think otherwise, I create dissonance. I don't change anything, I just create dissonance. What I want to create is harmony. So it's very important for me to feel good about how other people feel about me. And if I assume that they feel good about me because I'm good, and then it's very easy for me to feel good about them. Then what happens? A very interesting law of spirituality starts to operate. My assumption that I'm good and they like me, coupled with my perspective on their qualities, means that that other person will be influenced by my perspective and the atmosphere that my attitude has created, and they will indeed act according to how I think that they are acting. It's a very extraordinary thing. And this use of this spiritual law actually allows us to create an atmosphere of unity in a circumstance where superficially it might seem very disunited. Sometimes for the shift to take place where that feeling of total harmony is really there will take time. There are many, many underlying causes that we understand that create friction between people. And another thing that we can do, which is extremely important, is have faith in others. Having faith in others, even using the very word faith, assumes an act of faith. superficially, we might have various reasons for thinking, I can't have faith in this person. I can't rely on this person. I have no guarantee. There's a part of us, which is a really very weak part of us, that's always looking for guarantees. And you can never have guarantees. If instead of looking for guarantees, we take a step of faith and we just